What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz.
You know what time it is when the flute drops?
Yes, it's noon, of course. Flute time here on Sportsnet 650. Brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee?
Sure. If that's something you want to say, go nuts.
Something I already did.
I won't stop you. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, man? How was the Okanagan? You were, as you cryptically said on Friday, you were going there to do some stuff.
Is that what I said?
Yes.
I did a lot of stuff. I'll tell you that much. So I woke up in Kelowna today, drove down, went to Canucks Morning Skate. Here I am on the radio.
There you go.
Magic,
wow.
The magic of vehicular travel. So I saw the Kelowna Rockets advance past the Wenatchee Wild. Tiz Yaginla is outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond advertised. I saw a women's select tournament, watched North Vancouver's Chloe Primorano, maybe the best blue line prospect this nation has ever produced on the women's side, drafted into the WHL by the Vancouver Giants. She is sick. She is sick. Dominated at a preposterous level. And did some other work as well. So yeah, lots of stuff.
Big weekend.
Lots of good stuff coming down the pipeline. May have met Gavin McKenna.
I was going to say, for my purposes, the most jealous I've ever been of you is when you texted me to be like, I just met Gavin McKenna. I was like, what?
I didn't tell him.
Dang
that
it!
I didn't tell him that he's like the patron saint of Canucks talk. But
he's the mascot of our show.
No, he's way better, way more than that.
That's true.
Sharp kid.
Glad to hear it.
You can read more about it soon, Jamie.
Even if you didn't get like a good vibe from him, I would have needed you to tell me that you got a good vibe from him. Like, don't, you know what I mean? Don't burst my bubble like that.
No,
so I'm glad you genuinely did.
Really nice kid.
Very thrilling. I'm
and
very
obviously
excited to hear
an
that.
Outrageously talented player.
Indeed. All right, lots going on today. Let's get into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 8th, starting with the headlines. And stop me if you've heard this one before, but the Canucks lose to another possible first-round playoff opponent, and specifically to the LA Kings on Saturday, 6-3 in LA, wrapping up a three-game road trip. They're back at home to play Vegas tonight. And another one. The season series over against the LA Kings now until... or unless they meet in the first round of the playoffs.
Cam Talbot, not exactly the pushover our inbox insisted he was in every conversation we ever had about the LA Kings for 4 months, huh? Would you say those takes aged badly?
I mean, I don't know. Who is calling him a pushover?
Everyone in our inbox every time I brought up my regard for LA. Yeah. Goaltending.
Yeah, that's
goaltending.
Fair.
It's like, doesn't matter. They give up like three chances a game.
I actually thought the Canucks didn't generate that poorly.
No.
Now, a lot of that is score effects.
Well, yeah, but there have been, I mean, the Canucks were down by two goals to the LA Kings in their last meeting on home ice, 3-1 entering the third period, and they had one shot on goal until they pulled their goalie with 5 minutes left, and then they actually did kind of make it interesting, but they didn't do anything 5-on-5 until they pulled their netminder. At least they were clawing back. At least they were generating scoring chances, and they ended up with 40 shots. You know, I know Rick Tocchet's sort of commentary post-game was like, we thought we played pretty well. I don't know if I'd go that far, but at least the offense looked like it had the ability to solve some problems. And that's not something we can say about this Canucks team generally, so I like that part.
It's just really hard to judge those games once the Kings are up, and especially once the Kings are up two goals, right? And they were up two goals early, the Canucks claw back, but then, you know, eventually they were up multi-goals for most of that game.
Yeah, they never really got it. I mean, after the
3-1
goal,
so
they never got it to within a goal again.
So there was a stretch there where it was a one-goal game, and I thought the Canucks played pretty well in that stretch, but it's so limited. And LA is also such, like, they're such an extreme they change their mentality when they're leading, I think, more than a lot of teams, right?
Yeah.
So it's real. It's like score effects are almost amplified. Because like it's not like LA was generating tons of great scoring chances, but so much of that is their mentality, right? And what they're prioritizing in those moments.
Well, so I have a mailbag up at The Athletic, and I was asked to contextualize. The question was, and it was the most upvoted comment. Like, mm-hmm. It was the one that everyone wanted to hear more about, was how much is Vancouver's lack of offense a product of Rick Tocchet's system? Now, mm-hmm. I understand why people are asking this question, given the extremely negative way that Rick Tocchet's Arizona Coyotes played, right? Which, by the way, significant differences systematically between Tocchet's Coyotes and Tocchet's Canucks, which shows the sort of malleability you'd
sure.
expect
yeah.
from a top-tier NHL head coach, which is what I think Rick Tocchet is. And I think it's Bupkis, right? Like, I just don't think there's any... I think Rick Tocchet's devised a really smart way to win games with this roster. And I don't think there's, you know, not no blame. But I fundamentally do not think... that Vancouver's offensive struggles of late are a systems product.
Well,
in my view.
What I would say, though, is I feel like they are a result of systems, but just what you're saying, or at least partly, but just what you're saying is that the positives outweigh the negatives from the system.
Yeah, trade-offs.
Yeah, so it's true that they could play a different way that would generate more scoring chances and more offense.
Yeah, and not result in them
exactly,
winning as many games.
Would that actually help you control games and win more? That's
correct.
The question,
right?
Right?
And so I think they're doing exactly what they should do to maximize their chances of winning every game. But I was stunned when I was going through sort of the work, right? Because I'm just trying to, like, I know what I think, but I'm trying to prove it, right? And I was stunned when I found out that Vancouver had only won 3 times this season out of 17 attempts when trailing after 1 period.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not trailing after 2. That's not, you know, you're really up against it. That's like most of the game in front of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at the Rangers, you look at the Carolina Hurricanes, the usually punchless Carolina Hurricanes. You look at certainly Florida, Dallas, Colorado. I mean, the best teams in the league, their win rate when trailing after 20 minutes is closer to like 400%, and the Canucks are at 176.176. So, you know, I do think that speaks to the fine lines that this team deals with, which, you know, you can spin negatively if you want, but in terms of how Vancouver matches up with a Kings team that now really feels like they have their number, LA scored first in all 4 games. I think it's as simple as that. And by the way, I don't think that's something you can count on. Like, LA can't count on that happening time they play in the playoffs.
I don't think there's anything systematic about LA scoring more. It's just that's how it's – or scoring first. That's how it's gone.
It's random distribution.
And it completely changes the tenor of those games
right.
when it happens.
It's why in that same notebag or in that same mailbag, I say that I think LA is still – like, of the Nashville-Vegas-LA group, I still think LA is the team that I'd feel the most confident – picking Vancouver to advance against.
Yeah, I'd probably still go with Nashville, but I'll say this. Okay, so they lose 6-3, and it's LA again, and there's this idea like, oh man, they have their number, they can't do anything against the 1-3-1. That game didn't change my opinion of the matchup at all. Because I do, like, again, it wasn't that lopsided in terms of the run of play. There's areas of concern for the Canucks, of course. I mean, you give up those two penalty kill goals early on, like that's worrisome. Their special teams needs to be better. But, you know, I even thought the Canucks looked, for stretches of the game anyways, more comfortable attacking the 1-3-1. They scored 2 goals directly off entries against the set 1-3-1, right?
Yeah, with like Ian Cole jumping
yeah.
in and they found solutions.
Kronik with a nice pass to JT Miller streaking through the middle.
Yep.
Like, and I thought there were even more sequences where they were tactically doing the right things, but just their execution let them
yeah,
down a
they
little
were
bit.
Finding solutions.
Exactly.
Which again, is something I've continued to insist. Like, I don't think this Canucks team is going to be out of answers a la the 2020 Florida Panthers
yeah.
or the 2021 Florida Panthers against Washington and Tampa against their 1-3-1. I think between Tocchet and Miller and some of their more cerebral players, I really do think there's going to be answers to be found. And I thought we saw at least evidence of that,
100%.
Even though I thought overall it was not a good performance. And like, I didn't think it was down to goaltending. I didn't even necessarily think it was down to finish. I thought it was down to discipline. Like, I thought the Canucks played a wildly undisciplined game. I thought there were additional moments where the Canucks could have been penalized and weren't. The Zadorov hit on Byfield standing out particularly to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that had been even more than a 2-minute minor, I wouldn't have been shocked, to be totally honest with you. Likewise, when Quinn Hughes got boarded by Trevor Lewis, like, I thought both of those are on that borderline where if they stop play, call the major, review it, and then you have no sense of whether or not it's going to be confirmed or reduced. Like, I thought both hits could have been that. It just felt like LA was far more composed as that game went along. And to me, that doesn't equate to like a really good performance, even though there were, you know, some aspects to like if you squinted.
I think it's fair. And as Tockett said after the game as well, right, there was just some, there's too many big mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. So even if there were stretches where they were doing things really well, it was those glaring mistakes, whether it's discipline, whether it's defensive breakdowns, whatever the case is, execution in the offensive zone, they just couldn't make the good stretches really, really count. So I don't look at it as, oh, it's like super lopsided 6-3 multi-goal loss to a way better team. But it also wasn't like, oh, they definitely deserve to win that game and they just got, you know, screwed or whatever. There's nothing like that.
I thought they were full value for the clear defeat. I thought they were not close enough for it to have been a close game.
Yeah, I think it was like a 2-goal loss. One or two goal loss. Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like,
realistically,
it was a clear victory for LA. And in every phase of the game. I also just, before we move on, thought it was a little bit of a microcosm of some of what we've seen since the All-Star break, right? Where, you know, if you look at raw, this is like raw goals for rate, raw goals against rate. Obviously, goals against rate on the shorthanded, bottom 10. Goals for rate on the power play, bottom 10. I don't know exactly what the conversion rates are since the All-Star game, but I know that. So, you know, there's been some softness creeping into Vancouver's game in terms of the efficacy of their special teams units.
Yep.
Right? And that was really the ball game against the Kings. And for me anyway, you know, I'm not like overreacting at this point time of year. Like, I still am confident that I'm correct that this is the stretch of the season in which we learn the least about the Canucks in advance of the playoffs. But I it's not a new thing that Vancouver's special teams might be something of an Achilles heel for the club.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something dating back years. Anyway, it's become more pronounced, and I thought it cost them against the Kings, and sort of remains a part of their game that I'm, you know, I think it's like valid to be concerned about heading into the postseason.
Other headlines. So they're back at Rogers Arena. They'll play the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. Another possible first round playoff opponent. Of course, looking to avenge a tough result on the road in Vegas last week. Vegas a little bit shorthanded in different ways now with Alex Pietrangelo coming out of the lineup. But Tomas Hertl might make his debut. Sounds like he's going to make his debut for the Golden Knights tonight in Vancouver. So that'll be interesting to get a look at. We can talk about the Vegas game more later on throughout the course of the show. Just one other thing I did want to mention in the headlines from the weekend. Jonathan Lekaramäki scoring his first goal with the Abbotsford Canucks on Saturday in a losing effort. But still, Lekaramäki opens his account in the AHL.
And he's been listed along with former Canuck Oscar Fantenberg, former Canucks prospect Jonathan Myrenberg. Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other former Canucks.
No Canuck mention.
No, can't come up with any other. Anyway, he has been listed as being part of the world's roster. So the Canucks will release him from the American League accordingly at some point here. I'd expect an official loan announcement at some point this week. So Lekaramäki probably not playing too much longer in the American League, but obviously a taste of goal scoring success. And I know the organization's thrilled that he got a chance to see what it's like, get a sense of the rhythms, because it's a sharp adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an easy adjustment to make, even for a player as talented as Lekaramäki is.
All right, on to the broadsheet and the update from Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts today. And he had mentioned this on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday as well, that sounding like we probably won't see Thatcher Demko for maybe another week. So maybe looking at Saturday,
the
big divisional game against Edmonton. So at that point,
welcome back. Here's Connor McDavid.
If it's not going to be tonight, and if it's not going to be Wednesday, those are two home games, Vegas and Arizona. Then after that, you've got 2 days off. Then you've got Edmonton on the road, Calgary at home, Winnipeg on the road on the 18th are your final three games.
I just reading between the lines, this isn't based on any information, although I have reported that the club is very excited about the fact that they're going to have a rest at Demko. If there was like any concern, you know what I mean? I think you might be like, hey, here's Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
you know, if Saturday's when he gets thrown back into the fire, that's a team that thinks they have an ace.
It's an interesting read on it that it's not. So it's not so much about like, oh, we need, we're a little worried. Is he healthy yet? We need to delay. It's no, let's just give him time to rest.
There's one game remaining on the schedule that like could really matter. Let's save our ace for then.
All right. So there you go.
That's my read. Honestly, do you think that's?
No, I don't think I don't think it's unfair. I mean, I think there's always a concern about bringing a guy back too early, right?
Yeah.
Now, does the couple of days from Wednesday's game against Arizona from Edmonton make, or to the game on Saturday in Edmonton make that much of a difference? I don't know, but
yeah,
it's a little concerning. Like, that's a tough spot to put a guy in, but I guess they got that confidence in
Thatcher
Demko. And we'll see if it actually transpires. It could be game 81 against the Flames next week.
Andre Kuzmenko revenge game.
Better get Demko in there.
Yeah. The Lindholm, by the way, was at morning skate today and was like killing penalties, looked pretty involved, although he was absolutely an extra and is no threat to play tonight. We'll get into lineup shortly. But that was a player who looked pretty close to me, to be totally honest with you. I'd sort of read that as a guy who's got to be days away, day to day at this point.
It sounds like it, because he was even skating with the team at practice on Friday, right?
Yeah.
So he's had multiple skates in with the team here. It sounds like it's just a matter of time before Lindholm gets back into the lineup, which is huge if they can do anything to get him rolling and kind of salvage where that trade has gone. As you mentioned, lineup notes, same forward line, same defensive pairs as we saw on the weekend against LA. So it's Pettersson, Hoglander, Besser, Miller between Joshua Harland, Blaine McKayev, and Pod Colson, Niels Mon, Pugh Suter, and Sam Lafferty on the fourth line. As you said, Phil DiGiuseppe and Elias Lindholm were the extras today at practice. And then on the blue line, or at game day skate, I should say, Hughes and Hronek, Susie Myers, Zadorov, Cole, Friedman, and Juulsen as the extras on the blue line. Big note there that Elias Lindholm was skating and doing that penalty kill work. And then the really big note from the game day skate today, confirmed by Rick Tocchet, Artur Seelovs will get the start tonight against Vegas. Of course, there was some question. Would he get the opportunity against LA on the weekend after looking really sharp against Arizona? But instead, after Casey DeSmith lets in six in that game, Artur Seelovs comes in tonight against the Vegas Golden Knights, which is interesting because it kind of reverses the usage pattern we've seen here, right? Seelovs' previous two starts had been against the Ducks and the Coyotes. They have the Coyotes coming up on Wednesday, so they could have stuck with that kind of model of, okay, DeSmith gets the better teams, Seelovs gets the weaker teams, but apparently they've seen enough from Artur Seelovs that they feel comfortable rolling him out against a really good team in a pretty big spot here.
Or they've seen enough from Casey DeSmith.
That's possible as well.
DeSmith's struggles are almost entirely isolated to the PK. Like, he's, since Demko got injured, DeSmith's been 919 5-on-5, which is pretty good, especially in this contemporary NHL where save percentage is flirting with the 900 line for the first time in 25 years. Aside from the penalty kill, I really don't know that DeSmith's been at a level that you couldn't win with, that you shouldn't. Like, I don't think DeSmith's been at the level where he should have any singular finger pointed at him as like a reason for Vancouver's struggles or a context behind Vancouver's struggles. You've got to be able to win with your backup, and you also have to understand that most of these guys, you know, like, if you're the 50th best goaltender on the planet, right, which, by the way, unbelievable, but 50th best at what you do,
great,
you're an incredible human being, but if you're the 50th best goaltender on the planet, you might be able to spell a guy for 2 weeks. The seams might start to show in 3 weeks. And 4 weeks in, you might have a couple stinkers. Like, that's the difference.
That's how it goes.
Between the workhorse starters and a guy like DeSmith. I just don't sort of look at this stretch and think DeSmith, who I saw being carved by Canucks fans online as Saturday's game unfolded. Like, I definitely don't think he's been at the level where that's fair, deserved, or even within the realm of, like, what's actually happening out there. I think he's been fine for the most part. I think Vancouver's been really leaky, shorthanded, and that's where he's struggled. That ain't on him as much as you'd like to pretend it is.
I just think also it's just, as you said, it's the gap in what Thatcher Demko can give you at his best and what you get from a regular backup. And it doesn't mean he's ill-suited to be a regular backup. It's just he's not Thatcher Demko.
He's literally the NHL's median backup by salary, and he's performed like it. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, there's value there.
Archers Seelovs in the crease tonight for the Canucks against the Vegas Golden Knights.
One other note. Lineup looked the same in line rushes.
Mm-hmm.
But pairs were flipped beneath Hughes Hronek. So Soucy back with Myers, Zadorov and Cole back together. That was sort of the only material change up front. However, when I asked Rick Tocchet about it, he noted that 11-7 is a distinct possibility. He brought it up unprompted.
Interesting.
I didn't ask him about 11-7. He was like, Juulsen on the PK. Oh, boy. Do we need that? So curious to see which one of their fourth line at rushes was Amon, Suter, Lafferty. And I thought it was odd that Suter was on the,
wing there.
And Amon was at center. Is there perhaps a hint there? If the PK is so important, does that keep Amon in the lineup?
Interesting.
And cause Pew Suter to be scratched
to come back out
for the, what, would that be the second time in three games?
I believe so, yeah.
Don't like that.
No.
I don't like, one of the reasons I'm okay with Vancouver going 11-7 in Lindholm's absence is, like, I don't know that you have 12 above replacement level forwards, to be totally honest with you,
mm-hmm.
at the moment. But one of them is absolutely Pew Suter. Needs to get back in this lineup.
Playoff forecast. Oilers have won twice after that loss to Dallas. Ooh. Canucks lose to LA. Oh. It's almost a coin flip.
I know.
57% chance for the Canucks to win the Pacific. Ooh. 43 for Edmonton. Uh-oh. This one really could end up coming down to that game in Edmonton on Saturday.
As the Marcus Naslund speech echoes in our ears. So I'm going to go to Edmonton. If I think there's a chance
that this is like a decisive game on Saturday,
that it flips.
Yeah.
And for what it's worth, I'm not going to book travel till Thursday. I've made that executive decision.
Sure.
So I'm Canucks against Vegas tonight.
Edmonton, Arizona Wednesday.
Edmonton doesn't play till Wednesday.
Yeah. So it's common opponents this week just shifted by a couple days. So Canucks play Vegas and Arizona Monday, Wednesday. Edmonton plays Vegas, Arizona Wednesday, Friday. So they will be on the second half of back-to-back on Saturday.
And they've got 4 days off.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, I mean, this is as good as it gets. This is the race. Like, this is the race. This is what you're looking for.
So it's going to come right down to the wire. And again, game 80 could be decisive. A three-way race still for most likely first-round playoff opponent, according to the model. LA at 39%, Vegas 33%, Nashville 27%. So still all three teams very, very much in play to meet the Canucks in the first round.
Canucks fans are worried that Vancouver cannot beat playoff teams. Vegas does not share your concern. The Golden Knights are road dogs tonight. Consensus at about plus 105 for Vegas. Vancouver, a minus 118 home favorite. So, your concerns, not shared.
so go bet against the Canucks, is what you're saying.
Is that steam?
Your Canucks fan neurosis, not shared by Vegas.
Choo-choo!
The Canucks, by the way, I want to note this as well. The Canucks are minus 195 favorites now, consensus, to win the Pacific Division. They've been as high as minus 700 in recent weeks. Vegas, minus 115. Don't bet this market at the moment. That implied probability for Vancouver is like 66%, and the implied probability for Vegas is like over 50%, which means it's a soft market. Bet on the game. Don't bet on that.
All right. That's the whiteboard for today. Gemma Karsten-Smith joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.